Welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 80, recorded September 19th, 2011.
Your voice is almost as deep as mine right now.
Yeah, a pair of us are not feeling very well, so we apologize for the
gravelly voices. Yeah, we really haven't taken up smoking.
No, but we'll see what we can do. We'll try. The show must go on.
Yes.
So, and
we'll try to be coherent.
I'm sure our voices will warm up in just a minute. We'll be okay. All right.
What do we have first today?
Well, we have Stuart's comments on fertilizers.
Okay.
He commented on the Facebook page, and he said he uses John Innes, that's spelled I-N-N-E-S, like the famous aquarist for whom neon tetras are named after. Probably no relation, but there you go. John Innes number 2 fertilizer in his planted tanks. That's what Stuart does. He says a big bag from the garden center costs him about 4 pounds or so, compared to a teeny bucket of aquarium fertilizer for a million billion pounds. And
that's the aquarium fertilizer that he got at Christie's auction house.
Yeah.
A million billion pound one.
There you go. He says he also uses play pit sand instead of expensive aquarium sand and never had any issues.
So it's nice. Like sandbox sand.
Yeah, and, you know, there are certain types of sandbox sand you have to be very careful with, but other people use certain types as, you know, very effectively. So it's good to know, especially when you've got a name brand like that. It's also, you know, it's difficult to find a terrestrial fertilizer that you can use in an aquarium because there are, you know, the nitrogen, potassium, the phosphorus mixes and so on don't always work, but it looks like Stuart's found one that does, so that's good news. He says his plants grow faster than he can trim them, and they work great with CO2 and everything.
We haven't yet gone down to our local big box hardware gardening store to see if it's available here. We don't know for sure if that's available in the U.S., but since a great many of you listening are not in the U.S. right now, that's okay.
Yeah, if you're in the U.K., that might be something you can check out. We did look up this John Innes online and found some of the composts described, but I didn't see the fertilizer. So, Stuart, we wanted to ask you, is this a liquid fertilizer? Is it a granular fertilizer? What exactly is it? I'm very curious. I would love to get a hold of some of this because it is true. Even in the U.S., aquarium fertilizer, spelled with a Z, still costs a lot. It's I would love to get a hold of something that works great and is cheaper than what I usually get. So, yeah, thank you for bringing that up. If you can find one that does work, you know, that's wonderful. I've used the only terrestrial fertilizer I've used in my aquarium is the Jobe's plant spikes for palms. Now, part of the deal is that aquatic plants tend to have a different mixture of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium that works for them. Aquatic plants versus terrestrial plants. But palms have one that more closely approximates that of aquarium plants. So I have taken those Jobe's plant spikes, broken them up into little bits, and buried them in the substrate near the roots of heavy root feeders. And they've worked great for me. So
that's a good idea.
There are things that you can do, and that's not my idea either. You know, I got that online
that's
somewhere.
Okay.
But, well, I'm just letting them know. But the thing is, there are things that you can do that work
great.
You've
done that for a long time, though.
I've done it for a while.
It's kind of like a recipe. You do a recipe long enough, and you don't have to say that it's not your recipe anymore.
Even though it was your Aunt Martha's recipe or whatever.
Yeah, you know, nobody knows your Aunt Martha. It's okay. If you give them the recipe, they're not going to write so-and-so's Aunt Martha's recipe for plant fertilizer on it. They're just going to write so-and-so's recipe for plant fertilizer.
That's true. Well, I would like to give Stuart the credit for coming up with this, with the John Innes fertilizer, and I'd love to try it, so I'm going to see if I can get a hold of some. Okay. Next.
Oh, yes, next. Okay, I'm going to do this one. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Maybe this will become a tradition of you guys sending in your favorite fishy jokes. This one is from Cliff Hughes. And this is perfect because, you know, next week is Halloween. It says, when turtles die and haunt other turtles, this is called a Galapagos ghost.
I like that.
That was pretty good.
Now, I know that turtles aren't exactly fish. They're reptiles, but
They swim.
There are a lot of them that are aquatic, and so some of you keep turtles. Robert keeps turtles. Robert in Michigan. You know, he's one of our contributors who keeps turtles, and I'm sure there are others who do too. So there you go. I like that one. That's cool.
That's pretty good. Okay.
Okay, next one's from Juliet in Paris, France.
Oh, with her shrimp issues. She's trying to keep the shrimp alive, and they kept dying.
Well, the shrimp that she's keeping and breeding it herself do
fine. Yeah, but the ones that she was trying to add, she was trying to add new ones to her tank, and those ones kept expiring.
Right. Excuse me. Okay. So, she said that they tested the pH. We were talking about that last time we mentioned this, about testing the pH in the store and in her aquaria. And she's at pH 8.5, and they're at 6.5.
So the pet store's at 6.5, and she's at 8.5.
And that is a huge difference.
And where do the shrimps want to be? What's best for
them? Well, the shrimp are fairly comfortable a number of you know, different pHs. The problem is that's a huge astronomical gap. That on a logarithmic scale like that, it's astronomically dangerous. It's like...
Logarithmically dangerous. That could be an album name.
Yeah, it's just, it's a big change. It's definitely pH shock could result from that.
Okay, what's the band name? If that's the album name, I can't even say it, Logarithmically Dangerous. Mm-hmm. The band name's got to be something like...
Dissolving Shrimp.
Dissolving Shrimp, yes, that's perfect. There we go. Okay, we have kind of a thing, we collect weird band names that we make up, so...
And, well, this
now
is...
Now you're getting into that because our real selves are coming out across the airwaves. Dun, dun, dun.
There you go. Now, Juliet says that she was wondering about lowering the pH in her own shrimp tank by introducing RO water and then buying some new stock, some new shrimp. And there's a couple of options she is thinking about. One is to get her 5-gallon tank, adding some RO water gradually to lower it to about pH 7, which is a lot closer than to 6.5, and you know, more of a reasonable change for them to adjust to, or just move the lot of shrimp that she has right now into her bigger tank, which I think is a 30-gallon or close to that, and fill the nano up with a mix of RO and some tap, and then introduce the new stock. Well, and then she also wants to know if she has 8.5 pH tap water, what is the proportion of RO needed to reach the pH levels between 6.5 and 7 in one go. And she also wants to know if she can breed crystal reds in the same tank with red cherry shrimp without causing an issue. So lots of good bits
of
information.
Are they close enough to interbreed? I don't know the shrimp.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
We'll get to that.
I'm jumping ahead, sorry.
That's okay.
Jump in the shrimpy gun.
Well, let's say that she wants to lower the pH in the 5-gallon with RO water.
Okay.
I would just take it slow.
Excuse me.
I would probably just change 1 gallon at a time of the 5-gallon tank and just do a water change once a week, you know, with 1 gallon of water, and have the water I put into it be half RO and half tap water. And
so
do that.
So how many weeks are we talking to put enough in?
Do that for a month or so, and then start changing it, do a 3/4 tap, I mean 3/4 RO and 1/4 tap, and do that for a couple of weeks. You want to do it gradually.
Really slow.
Just to be safe. You could probably do it a little faster, but that's what I do. And I test the pH weekly of the tank. Not just right after I did the water change either, because...
Maybe the middle of the week or so.
A few days after you do the water change. And then she wondered about doing this or just moving her existing shrimp and changing all the water in one go. I personally would just prefer a gradual change rather than putting it all in, because... There are some things that can happen. I mean, when you're changing the pH, you can also possibly disturb the bacterial colonies, you know, your cycle. You could also have a sudden and very deadly pH crash down to levels that don't really support most kinds of aquarium life. And about the exact proportions, it's really difficult to say the exact proportions for several reasons. One is because you often have dissolved CO2 in your tap water that gases out after, you know, a few hours. So you can get different readings from when it comes out of the tap as when it's been sitting around.
Is that part of ways that don't test it right after you change it?
Right. And then another one is that there could be buffers in the water, and there probably are almost certainly buffers in the water, and what kinds of buffers and, you know, what proportion. And also the type of RO membrane you have and the efficiency of your RO membrane, how recently it's been cleaned, all that kind of stuff. So it's difficult to do. But what I would say is if you want to do that, where you just do it all in one go, I'd try before I even did it, I'd take 3 parts of RO water to 1 part of tap water. And aged tap water that's, you know, sat around for at least 24 hours, so it's outgassed. And then mix it, let all the buffers do all their business for another 24 hours maybe, and then take a reading and see what your pH is. Yeah. And then once you've done that, you can adjust. So you can say, oh, that wasn't near enough RO water, I'm going to do 4 parts RO to 1 part tap, and so on, until you get that with just 1 gallon of water, and then you have a pretty good idea of what to do to put in the other tank. That's...
So you're trying this with smaller amounts of water just to see what the reading turns out to be. You're exactly. Not doing this with the whole tank.
Right, you wouldn't do that with the whole tank yet. But once you figure out what a good proportion is, so you're getting between 6.5 and 7, then you go with that proportion in the tank if you're going to switch that over. And as far as the crossbreeding of the shrimp goes, shouldn't be an issue because they are different genera, which is the plural of genus, for those of you who are wondering what the heck I'm saying, because I might pronounce it differently than you do. Yes, they are different, and so it shouldn't be an issue. That was my recollection, and I have some links to back that up. I'll put this on the resources page, this link from a Canadian shrimp site, shrimptank.ca, where they it's a big PDF of it's a crossbreeding key, so you can look at one
shrimp
on one side.
Crossbreeding key.
Right, just for shrimp.
Wow.
You look from one your species to the species you're worried about, the two species you're worried about, and then it intersects and it says yes or no.
So it's like a multiplication table for shrimp.
Yeah. I kind of like that. That works. Yeah.
I just thought that up right now.
You did. That was cool. That's the beauty.
I'm so clever.
Improv internet radio, or whatever you call it. That was pretty good. I like that. Multiplication table. So, it should not be a problem. So, thanks, Juliet, and good luck with that. Also, I was going to say, Mick, last week, he mentioned something about his method for acclimating shrimp, and I think that could really work for you, too. It might make it easier. It might not be any easier. It might be easier. I don't know. But it's worth a look. It sounds like a really good method. So
did we talk about that last week?
That was in episode 79 last week.
So you can go back and review that then.
Yeah. Okay. And next.
Next.
Speaking of Mick.
Oh, I love this. This is heartwarming right here.
Why don't you go ahead and
feel
cool.
This one? Okay. Well, was it last week?
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay, Paul in the UK, excuse me.
in Durham.
I thought Mick was in Durham.
No, he's
no,
in Concord.
Paul's in Durham. Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry,
they're
Mick.
Both in the north.
It's the cold talking, it's not me. we love you guys. Paul in Durham in the UK wanted some shrimp, some cherry shrimp, and we kind of jokingly said on the air last week, well, dang, you should get in touch with Mick on the other side of the UK, and I bet he could hook you up. And then we got a letter, an email from Paul, and he says, just thought I would send you a quick update and let you know that I contacted Mick, and he is kindly sending me some cherry shrimp. If you could give him a big shout-out on the podcast, as he saved me quite a bit of money as he charged me only the postage. A top guy via a top-notch podcast from Paul. So I think that's so cool.
That is cool.
You know, we're all the way out here in Salt Lake in Utah, and you guys are, you know, I don't know, 8 hours away time zone-wise, and we're hooking you up for shrimp, and you get in touch with each other, and, you know, spreading the fishy love. So we just thought that was really cool that you guys were able to hook up and get some shrimp to Paul.
Yeah, that was really nice of Mick to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, well, Paul mentioned how grateful he was for that, and it's just kind of neat that we're helping people network all across the world.
And that Mick sent it only for postage. That's pretty awesome.
That is.
Oh, and I think we're about to enter into break, so...
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquaramax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
Oh, right. And still on the subject of Mick, you remember he went to that really cool aquarium where you walk on the floor.
Called the Deep.
Yeah, you walk on the floor and it has pictures of fish that swim away from you.
Yeah, it's a virtual tide pool.
Yeah.
And there are also sea jellies there.
Yes, and he sent us some pictures for us to put up on the resource page. And there was such a cute model in the pictures.
Yeah, his little daughter was in there. And he gave us permission to put her up on the page, so we will, and you can check those out.
So you can go see the virtual tide pool and the jellyfish, and Mick's very cute little girl.
Yes, and I'm going to try to get the shrimp video he sent us up on there, too.
Oh, good.
Yeah, YouTube. I had trouble uploading it before, so he's given me permission to do that. And so we'll check that out. All right. We've got another contributor all the way from the land down under.
Australia. So it's from Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay, Jackson is wondering about bristlenose catfish. He wanted us to talk about those. He just got one. He wants to maybe get another one and breed them.
Yeah. I would say this is a great project to embark upon, as they are quite easy to breed. But you do need to provide them with the proper situation. But once you do, they'll keep breeding for you. It's not particularly difficult to do. But they are also not quite as prolific as some of the other easy breeders.
Like guppies.
Guppies. Or even some of the other egg layers like zebra danios. Say, you know, you can get hundreds of zebra danios a lot quicker than you wanted to. You know, if you start, you get a good spawn and you raise all those fry, you're going to have...
And then what do you do with them?
A lot more zebra danios than you know what to do with, right.
So they're easy enough to breed, but you don't have so many babies that you don't know what to do with them.
Right. You might get 40 or 50 in the first batch, and they do reproduce... I'm not saying they're not prolific, because they certainly are, but they're not as prolific as some of the others, and you usually get a more ready market for them. They do grow fairly slowly when they start out, when they're little. And then they kind of speed up, but they're not the fastest growing fish.
But you should be able to take them into the pet store and get something for the babies.
Right. You should be able to do that.
Instead of begging them to take them off your hands.
Right. And the babies are cute, and they're fun. They can come out at a large adult size. They don't require any special food. They just eat the same things the adults do.
That's nice.
So they're fairly simple. The parental care is fun to watch. Basically, all you need to do is put a container... some sort of cave for the male, and don't try to keep more than one male in a tank unless you have a big tank with lots of hiding places. Like a 55, you can probably keep a couple males in. Anything smaller than that, I wouldn't advise putting more than one male in, although you could put more than one female in. And then I wouldn't really breed them in anything less than a 20-gallon. 20-gallon is probably good. And the male needs a cave. I generally use either driftwood. You get a driftwood that has sort of a natural cave in there. Or there are online, you can buy ceramic caves made especially for bristlenoses.
They're kind of cone-shaped, aren't they?
Yeah, there's some cone-shaped ones. I have a cone-shaped one. You can use a flower pot. I like to take a... They have the lower flower pots. They're kind of squat-shaped. You know, terracotta squat flower pots, like for azaleas or whatever.
Just kind of knock a hole for the cave entrance out of it.
Yeah, rather than knock it, though, I usually take... I soak the pot in water for a few hours, and then I get needle nose pliers and just break bits off.
Oh, look at you with your finesse. Because I'm just going to go start knocking doors and things.
Well, I've noticed I crack them too often if I try that. So I don't, you know, some people use a screwdriver and a hammer or something in that. I just have found that if I use needle nose pliers and break off wee bits at a time, and then I use a piece of rock to sort of smooth the edges once I've done that, just rub them smooth.
So
nobody scratches themselves. That those work just fine too, and they'll hide in those and breed in them. And the males, you know, they'll stake out a little spot there, and the females will come over to it eventually and lay eggs in there, and then that's basically it. Just feed them well, and they won't attack the babies. The females won't attack the babies. The males won't. The males will protect the eggs and then the babies for a couple of weeks after they hatch, maybe, or, well, between a week and several weeks, depending. I've heard different reports. In my case, I see them starting to leave the nest when they're only about a week old sometimes. Week to 2 weeks old. Leave
Such
the nest.
Independent little things.
Yeah, and as long as you don't keep any fish in the tank that will eat them, you know, angelfish would gulp them up, and, you know, anything big enough would. But those are the very basics. But let me tell you, we've got some good news for you. Episode 8 of the Aquariumx audio show is all about breeding bristlenose pleco. So go check that out. Listen to that. See if you have any questions once you've listened to that. It should have all the information you need, much more detailed than what we just gave you. And if it doesn't, then let us know, and we'll be happy to fill you in. Okay. Another thing.
iTunes.
Yes, we need to talk about iTunes, don't we? We just wanted to say that we would love it if those of you who listen by iTunes, we know a large proportion of our listeners do get the podcast through iTunes. We would love it. It's just a request. If you'd go on there and rate us and or leave a review, and please be honest, you know, give us what you think we deserve.
Except if it's bad, and then just send it to us in an email and we'll try to fix it. But don't put it up there for the world to see.
Well, we would just like to get, you know, a little bit of publicity there on iTunes. We have some already, but it's a really good way to spread the word. And so if you have a few minutes and you would like to do that, please do. We would love it. Just as a special favor to us.
Help us spread the word so more fishy-minded people can find us.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make it easier for them. So that's one of the easiest ways these days to just spread the word is to get reviews and so on, and then
then they'll bring us up in searches better.
All right. And that is about it for this week. But I'd just like to close with this shallow thought for the week.
What's your shallow thought? Okay.
Because I can't say the other thing, the opposite of shallow thought, because that's already copyrighted, but I can say shallow thought, so I'm going to.
Okay.
Okay, here I go. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. A fish in the hand is wondering when you're going to put it back in the water. There you go. So may the fish be with you, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll
thank you for joining
here
us.
For next week so we can talk to you longer.
Yes, and we'll boost the volume. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquariumx Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquariumx.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquariumx.com.